Hello neighbors, welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. Sometimes we see a successful farming operation and we make the mistake of thinking that it was a smooth journey from the inspiration to the development to what we see today. Maybe sometimes that happens, but in this world, there are often fits and starts, setbacks and open doors. Today's story is one such tale.
I can remember coming home after 2.5 years of university, and I sat down to the table and I said to my mother, I said, Mom, you know, this is not for me. You know, I was born a farmer, I will be a farmer, and here I am today, still a farmer.
For the number of times I've been to the commercial farming district in St. John's, I should really know where I'm going, but somehow the area confuses me, so remembering how to get to today's interview was a bit of a challenge, even though I'd been there before. I can't tell you how I got there, but it involved Old Babels Road and Pearltown Road, and I ended up at the farm, which is within a turnip's toss of Pitt's Memorial Drive. But don't toss it, though. It's save it for dinner. I'm visiting Lester's Farm Chalet, owned and operated by Michelle and Jim Lester, and their kids, who play a major role in this story, as you'll find out. It's a frosty December morning, and I sit down with Jim in the chalet. And I should mention that Jim is also a member of the House of Assembly, in case you didn't know, but they don't let him wear his farmer coveralls to the House sittings. I think that all MHAs should wear coveralls. It would make them look like they were dressed for some serious work.
My name is Jim Lester, and we're here on our family farm, my wife Michelle and I and our three children. We operate Lester Farms Incorporated. Our trade name, I guess, is Lester's Farm Chalet. And basically, we left working with my parents back in 2001. And we came up here, pulled the car on the side of the road, and took out the chainsaw and started cutting the path.
So what I'm seeing here, this clearing, this is pretty much from 2001.
Yes. Yeah, everything here is from 2001. Yeah. Originally, we had started a food processing business in our basement. And at that time, you know, the retail sector was moving towards more ready-to-eat products and value-added products. So we found an opportunity where we could supply pre-prepared meals and prepared produce to the grocery stores. So in our first year, we had a little under $100,000 sales, and then by year five, we were up to $1 million. And I guess we were victims of our own success. We built a HACCP-based food processing facility, and then one day, for no reason, no reflection of our productivity or our quality of product, it was just a corporate decision by our major customer come in and said, yeah, okay guys, you've done a great job, but your segment of the market is now big enough and technology has advanced that we're going to supply it all from one central location for all of Eastern Canada. So within 7 days, we were out of business, and yeah, that was pretty crazy. I tell this story, and I you know, fill up with emotion every time I do. That was on a Friday, October the 24th, and I know it was 25th because it was actually my birthday that they gave me the news. It's wonderful.
They didn't know that at the time.
And that was the weekend of Open Farm Day. That's a nationwide, I guess you could say, open house for people, the public, to visit farms. And you know, we had engaged ourselves to be involved in it that year. And but myself and my wife, we were just knocked on our pants that bad. When it came time to get up that morning, we just couldn't do it. We just said, no, look, you know, we don't know what we're going to do. We went from $20,000 a week sales down to zero for no fault of our own. Just, you know, the way things, the economies have scaled.
Distribution system,
So fortunately for us, we raised three good kids, and they were only at that time probably 10, 7, and 4. And they were all excited, and they didn't quite understand the whole situation. So they came knocking on our door, our bedroom door. And anyways, we just said, no, no, go back to bed. We're not getting up. And anyways, they came in and shook the bed enough that we got up. So we got up and we came up here to the farm, and we opened our gates. And at that time, we just had this was you know, basically a cleared gravel lot at the time. And we did have our processing facility here, but you know, it wasn't for public access or anything. And that day, we hosted over 1,000 people came to our farm. And that was kind of the rebirth of our firm. We went on this journey of agritourism, and since then we've built our firm chalet, where we host everything from kids parties to weddings to corporate development. We also operate a day camp in the summer, where you know, kids will come and experience farm life for a week at a time. And you know, from an agricultural production point of view, well, you know, all these activities are basically tools that we use to value add our product.
Yeah.
So, you know, we only have a limited land base, and, you know, in St. John's in particular, you know, land is a very, very, very hot commodity. You know, being, you know, while I'm a sixth generation farmer, like my family's farmed here for over almost 200 years now, our farm itself, mine and my wife's, Michelle's, is a first generation farm. And so that puts our firm at a serious disadvantage when it comes to competition for land. So that's a, you know, that's a challenge. But you know, we really enjoy what we do, and we enjoy working with the public. In addition to, I guess, our agritourism activities, we're still growing about 30 acres of vegetables, you know, plus or minus a couple acres each year. Most of those vegetables go through this the building that we're sitting in here, our chalet, in the form of meals for the events. We also operate a CSA program, a community supported agriculture program. This will be our third year. Basically, we take about 100 clients or 100 shareholders a year in the summer for our Roots Rock program. And that consists largely of vegetables and products that we produce in the fields. And then now this time of year, in you know, December, well, the people tend to be a little bit busy. So our Roots Rock clues up the end of November. But then as of the 1st of January, we start with what we call our Gills and Greens program. And you know, people kind of, gills, what's that all about? Well, that goes into our aquaponics facility. We have a large aquaponics facility, and to the best of my knowledge, we are one of the largest in Canada.
So tell people what aquaponics, okay, for those who don't.
Well, aquaponics is a very, very neat concept that was originally developed by the Amazonian natives. And of course, well, we all know that the Amazon forest itself, the forest floor, is very devoid of nutrients. But the Amazon is loaded full of, you know, runoff and nutrients that would come from the land into the river. So what the Amazonian Indians did was they used to tie logs together and make a raft, and they would plant their vegetables down in the crevices of the logs. So the roots of the plants would be suspended in the river, removing nutrients from the river. So we've kind of adapted that to the point where we operate a hydroponic vegetable growing facility. But instead of using chemicals, we just use an eco balance between the fish that we raise and the waste they produce, and then the bacterial conversion, which converts the nitrites to nitrate. I always get that confused. The nitrites to nitrate, and then the water goes out into you know, through a few different filters. So there's not actually fish waste going into the plant bed, because, you know, that can cause a whole lot of issues, not from a human pathogen point of view, but more of a plant pathogen point of view. So then the water from the fish tanks flows through the filters and goes out into two shallow ponds in a greenhouse. And on those shallow ponds, we have floating rafts in which we plant vegetables, largely herbs and salad greens and leafy greens. And the vegetables' roots, they hang down into the water and remove the nutrients from the water. So basically, it's a complete balance between, you know, we feed the fish, the fish produce waste, contaminates the water, the water gets pumped out, cleaned by the plants, and back through again. So it's a complete cycle. It's what we call a zero waste facility. So the only things that we produce, or that we leave that building, are food we eat, harmless evaporation, or materials we would compost.
Are these tilapia, is that the species of fish?
Yes, it is. Yeah, we use tilapia. And, you know, that's not a widely eaten fish in Newfoundland, but it is actually the second most eaten fish in the world.
Is it now?
Yes. And, you know, it does have a bit of a reputation, I guess, in certain circles, you know, for being produced in unsanitary conditions in third world countries. But, you know, our tilapia, we produce it, you know, with water that we pump from our drilled well. And, of course, food safety is paramount. The idea is to keep it as natural as possible, mm-hmm. but it also has to be a closed system to prevent any pathogens from getting in.
So if you're in the Gills and Greens program, do you get tilapia as part of your basket?
Yes. You can have it as an add-on. Yeah. You can get a fish per week. The tilapia is such a versatile fish when it comes to cooking. It's, you can do so many different things with it because unlike cod, which obviously we're most familiar with, it won't flake apart.
Okay.
So you can have a fillet that will stay together.
Do you have a song that I should put under all of this? Something that you hum on the tractor?
Or Don't Stop Believing by Journey.
Okay. There's a special message for you.
Yeah.
One of Journey's big hits, Don't Stop Believing, as requested by today's guest, Jim Lester. We're chatting on his farm inside the municipality of St. John's, a city that isn't afraid to mix human habitation with food production. In this segment, we talk about the rise of prepared foods and the importance of agritourism.
You mentioned earlier about the drive toward more prepared foods, and people are not cooking as much. In spite of the fact that our bookstores are full of books on cooking, and people talk about cooking constantly, are you continuing to kind of struggle with that, or how do you deal with that market?
That market, unfortunately, is becoming very nationalized. Mm-hmm. Like the processed food industry, one company will tend to supply right from Vancouver to St. John's, mm-hmm. and that presents some financial challenges for local producers because, in Newfoundland, we account for less than 6% of the total Canadian grocery market. Mm-hmm. So when a large company like, for example, Tinamura and Antle or Dole mm-hmm. or Bolt Farms mm-hmm. Out of the States is putting in a pricing for a prepared product, be it mini peeled carrots or shredded lettuce or a pre-prepared salad, they look at Newfoundland as, yes, okay, well, we do understand that it costs more to get it there, but because we're such a small portion of the market, it will actually blend in with the national pricing. So that mm-hmm. presents some challenges. And, with fewer and fewer grocery, retailers, there's less customers. So what we decided to do was, we kind of took a full switch from our prepared foods mm-hmm. and, semi-processed products. And we went back to, through the CSA program, mm-hmm. Where people want to buy whole vegetables. They want to buy different vegetables. Mm-hmm. So, we've kind of targeted that that segment of the population. When you look at our agritourism activities, mm-hmm. we decided, yes, that, we would value add to our products, and that's how we, are able to maintain profitability on a mm-hmm. small acreage with rising costs every day.
Mm-hmm. Do you have to send recipes along with the bags if you have an unusual vegetable, as you say.
Yes.
Do you give people suggestions about
They normally get a newsletter once a week that will describe what's in the bag and you know, some of the different health aspects of some of the different herbs and you know, what you can do, like you know, for one example, we grow a type of salad vegetable, a salad green called amaranth.
Oh yes.
And you know, a lot of people know amaranth as you know, a bedding plant, but it's actually a very you know, very nutritious salad green. You can stir fry it, salad, boil it. And you know, I had never tried it myself until you know, we started the Gills and Greens program, and now it's one of my regular items in my diet.
Do you remember when you decided that farming would be what you did?
Yeah, it's a funny story. You know, growing up in a farm family, well, you know, we had you know, a lot of challenges because, of course, well, you know, I'm 46 now, so you know, I was kind of 10, 11 years old in the 80s when interest rates were sky high and family farms were disappearing. And I can remember my mother telling me over and over again, don't be a farmer, don't be a farmer, don't be a farmer. And I actually went off and went to university, and well, before that I was in high school, and I did French immersion because I had ideas of that I was going to get a degree of some sort, and you know, get a government job or you know, be a teacher or a lawyer or something like that. And I can remember coming home after 2.5 years of university, and I sat down to the table and I said to my mother, I said, Mom, you know, this is not for me. You know, I was born a farmer, I will be a farmer, and here I am today, still a farmer.
In terms of like building an interest in food and in local food and an understanding about food and food system, what role does agritourism play in all that?
Well, you know, I always tell everybody when I get them out on the wagon and take them for a run through the fields, well, I'll stop along the way. And I have this one particular field, and it's about 5 acres. And I'll stop and I'll explain to them, you know, see this field? This field is a pretty big field, isn't it? And everybody says, oh, yes, yeah. And they'll say, you know, they'll have a few comments to it, and, oh, it'd be nice to have a house here, or nice to put something there. And I said, oh, gosh. So I just bite my tongue when they say that.
But say something French under your breath.
But I say to them, now, did you know, okay, yes, on this 5 acres, I can produce enough food on this 5 acres that not one of us on this wagon would have to go to the grocery store ever for one full year. And then they kind of just like look at it, and I said, and they say, well, you know, it's really, when you think about that, that's not a very big piece of land to produce all that food. And then I come up and I say, well, did you know that the problem is there's just not enough people producing food? And I said, you don't necessarily need to be a farmer to produce food. I mean, you'd be surprised how much food you can grow at home. I'm always a big proponent of home gardening or community gardening because, you know, well, foremost, of course, gardening provides you with nutritious, fresh produce. Mm-hmm. But number two, it keeps you active, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And we all need more activity. There's no doubt about that. But probably most importantly, one of the aspects, I guess, that we don't realize what gardening does is it provides you with time, you know, quiet time with your family and friends, mm-hmm. to work together as a family or work together as a community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that that's something that in this world, in the Western world for sure, that we're surely lacking.
We're here on the verge of, well, right beside the highway here. Urban is, can't be ignored. What's the role of municipalities and urban communities in this province in terms of moving food security forward? Sometimes there's things in the news that aren't as positive about that. But
well, you know, they basically, in our city, of course, in St. John's, we've got a very, I guess, pro-agriculture council, mm-hmm. and pro-agriculture policy. Back in the 70s, this piece of land here, as our family farm on Brookfield Road, was engaged to be developed. And we had, my grandfather had packed us all up, moved us to PEI. Yeah. And this was going to be turned into to housing units. And I guess between the financial crisis of interest rates rising and, you know, the subsequent reduced demand, the individual who had engaged to purchase the property canceled this option. And then my grandfather moved back here, and we still farm today. And, you know, the farm farmland in this area, of course, is protected under the Agricultural Lands mm-hmm. Protection Act. And, you know, that's something that, you know, we went from over 50,000 acres down to about 20-odd mm-hmm. thousand now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but that is basically stopped at this point. In the past, say, decade and a half, you know, we're not seeing the same erosion of little pieces of land being carved off here and carved off there.
Bit of inspiration there from Journey, Don't Stop Believing. During this last section, I couldn't fight the temptation to ask my guest an obvious question. How do you separate out Farmer Jim from MHA Jim?
So there's a real move to try to increase agriculture in this province. And do you have some suggestions or some ideas about how it can be done? How can we get new people coming in?
Yeah, you know, one of the biggest challenges with attracting new entrants is the financial model of a firm. In non-supply, now supply managed industries, they also have their challenges, but when you're looking at non-supply managed, well, you have to be the producer, the processor, and the marketer. And that can consume you, that can consume a lot of your time. And often it's very difficult, you know, as one individual to keep up. We do need to put more emphasis on the reduction of red tape and bureaucracy. You know, that's one of the biggest things that I hear from you know, new farmers. So, you know, there's all, yes, there will always be success stories, and I'm proud of that, you know, there will be, but you know, for every one success story, there's probably 15 people that you know, never stepped foot on the ground that you know, had intentions. You know, agriculture and food security cannot be a political vehicle, because you know, farmers and successful farmers are generally very practical people. You know, governments can change policy, yes, which needs to be done. Governments can make announcements on funding and, you know, commitments. But the reality is, it's going to be farmers who put the plows in the ground and produce food.
What do people want from their food these days? Is it changing over the time you've been here?
It is. Like, people are more acceptant of, I guess, standard deviations of produce.
Okay.
Such as, you know, if they see a bug on their vegetables, well, you know, they're okay. Well, that's all right. You know, that's right. It's not a bad thing,
right?
So, you know, people are asking for less pesticide use, more sustainable farming methods. They're also asking for, you know, where are those curly carrots? You know, like, you know, I don't mind eating them. They still taste the same.
Right.
And, you know, if you know, in less than 20 years, we're going to have to double the amount of food production in this world.
Yeah.
And, or we can start to use more of these products that were no longer, or that are, you know, don't meet, don't meet the grade, but are still perfectly fine to eat.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's something we're going to have to look at because, you know, when you think of our fragile little planet, having to double the amount of production of food, it's just, I really don't know if we can, I don't think our ecosystems can handle that.
Yeah. I have to ask you how you separate out, if you can, Farmer Jim from MHA Jim. Has that been an interesting kind of transition? It's been a year or so.
Yeah, well, I shared a joke with you last week about how there's one common element on the farm and in politics, and on the farm I can use it for a lot of good.
That's right.
But again, you know, the theater of politics is something that I'm not used to. Mm-hmm. As I said, most farmers, myself included, are very practical people and logical people.
Yeah.
You know, we have to look at putting policies in place that will protect our agricultural industry. Right now, supply managed in particular the dairy industry, is under a very serious threat. Mm-hmm. Without the dairy industry and the other supply managed industries, that will remove a substantial amount of agricultural activity mass.
Yes. Yeah.
And if that mass pulls out or no longer exists, well, all of a sudden, there's not going to be volume enough activity here for the feed suppliers.
Yeah.
Nor the equipment dealers, nor the provincial support as it comes to staff. So, you know, it's very, very important that our government, no matter what brand or flag they fly, stand up and make a special case for all agricultural producers in our province. And if that means legislation to protect them and to make sure that we can be compensated fairly, well, so be it.
It's a bit like a mall. The anchor tenants, when they move out, causes a lot of problems. So supply managed come out, like the dairy industry, sort of like the anchor tenants in a lot of rural areas.
Yes.
It's the Sears and the Target once they go.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's very important.
So you're on a limited land here, as you say, and then the land is very much in demand around here. Do you have any plans for any kind of expansion?
We've applied for land in one of the agricultural areas of interest just outside the city. Our application actually went in last January, and we're still awaiting the turnaround on it. So
I've heard this a couple of times.
So it's
good to know you're in the same category as everybody else.
Yeah.
No political advantage.
Yeah, that's right. I know, but the Munn Woodlot is just outside the town here, just opposite Thomas's Pond, and there's some fairly decent soil there. If you go out over the highway, well, you'll see there's probably four ridges right in a row. You know, those ridges seem to have really nice soil.
Great. What's your favorite local food?
My favorite local food. Now, I like, you know, I generally eat a fair few vegetables raw out in the field. Probably one of my most favorite things to eat is second shoot broccoli. That's when, you know, you cut the main head off and then the second shoots come out on the side. And that's probably my most favorite thing to eat.
Just raw, just as that
Just as it is.
Yeah.
You know, I love their traditional vegetables like turnip. I can eat a turnip like an apple.
Yeah.
And, you know, the cabbage as well. But, you know, our potatoes in particular, like even local, like even provincially, you know, you get different flavors of potatoes growing in different areas.
Yeah.
And I do particularly like the flavor of our potatoes.
Jim, thanks for taking the time to do this.
Oh, great. It's a pleasure.
Great.
Today I've been speaking with Jim Lester of Lester's Farm Chalet. From tragedy sometimes comes opportunity. If Jim and Michelle had not lost their earlier commercial contract, we may never have had Roots Rock or Gills and Greens or an aquaponics facility. Of course, to them, it certainly didn't feel like an opportunity at the time. This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. If you have questions or comments, email me at fittoeatnl@gmail.com. To listen to other episodes or for more information, go to www.fittoeatnl.ca. The music for today's show was Don't Stop Believing by Journey. The theme music, Cluckold Hen, was done this week by Paul Eli Smith. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. Happy trails.
The reality is we have to take the politics and the political theater out of agriculture in order for it to really, really rise to a level where it should be.
Agriculture is dramatic enough as it is.
Yes.